Chapter 7 Belly of the Beast. The last silver saint tilted his head back, drinking deep. The historian watched from the armchair opposite, one blonde eyebrow arched. Gabriel finished his wine, sighing as he reached for the Monet, and, despite all hopes to the contrary, found it finished. "No song so sad as an empty bottle," he murmured.
"She let you fall," Jean-François mused. "Your sister."
"Well, for the sake of historical accuracy, it's probably safer to say she dropped me."
"That was rather mean-spirited of her?"
Gabriel nodded, rueful. "Selene was a behemothic cunt." Jean-François chuckled. "Still, it seems a fool's gambit to toss you aside before the battle was won. Dread Sanguiman says she might have been, but she was wounded, spent. Your Hellion had little chance against two high-blooded Divok alone."
"Phoebe had already cut them to ribbons. Wounded and unarmed, I'd not have been much help in the fight anyway, and Selene knew if I somehow made it off that bridge alive, I'd make good on my promise and take the Grail to the Highlands. If she ended me face to face, Dior would never trust her again. But if I simply slipped from her grip in the heat of battle..." Gabriel shrugged. "My sister played the cards she'd been dealt."
"And what cards did the Wolf Mother play in response?"
"Well, that's the problem, Cold Blood."
The Silver Saint stroked his smooth chin.
"I've no fucking idea. I was rather preoccupied, gravity being what it is."
"You survived the fall. That much is obvious."
Gabriel nodded. "Pale bloods don't die easy. But the roads I found myself on afterward led me places I'd not imagined. It'd be months before I heard word of Dior again."
"So,"
the historian sighed, looking to the thin window,
"we come to it at last."
"Come to what, Chastain?"
"My dove,"
the Marquis called. The cell door opened swiftly, hinges creaking. Meline awaited on the other side, head bowed and dutiful, adoration in her eyes.
"Master?"
"Bring the good Chevalier another bottle, my love. We must keep our guest amused in our absence."
Jean-François glanced to the Silver Saint.
"Unless I could tempt you with something stronger. Meline could entertain you, if you wish."
Gabriel glanced to the woman, and for a moment, Jean-François saw she met his gaze. The Marquis knew his majordomo hated the Silver Saint. She'd never forgive his attack on her beloved master, after all. But the vampire also knew the look of desire, and he saw Meline's skin prickling as her gaze drifted over the Silver Saint's mouth, the arc of his lips. In the end, no drug could hold a candle to the kiss. No sin of mortal flesh could compare. And as much as she despised him, Gabriel could give her that. Clawing and cursing, bare and begging and biting, the promise of it thudding along her jawline, rising in her quickened breath. Jean-François smiled as Gabriel tore his eyes from Meline's throat.
"Wine is fine.
I could have my boy bring refreshment, if you've desire of a different flavor."
The Marquis frowned, befuddled.
"What was his name, dove?"
"Dario, master," Meline replied.
"Ah oui, Dario."
The vampire sighed the name, his smile razor blades.
"He has not served me long, but he is exquisite, de Leon. I can easily arrange a sampling. Or if you like, he and Meline could both..."
"Wine," Gabriel growled, "is fine."
Jean-François chuckled. "See to it, love." With a last glance to the Silver Saint, Meline curtsied and left the room, locking the door behind her. Jean-François took a kerchief from his frock coat, Gabriel frowning as he watched the vampire cleaning the golden nib of his quill. Stowing it in a wooden case, the historian closed the leather-bound chronicle in his lap, and with another, longer sigh, He rose from his armchair, smoothing the lines of his coat with one slender hand.
"Where are you going?" the Silver Saint asked. "The night is young."
"And I shall return before its end, mon ami,"
the vampire smiled.
"I thought your empress wanted the whole of my tale."
Jean-Francois adjusted his cravat about his wounded throat.
"I think we may consign pretense to the flames, Gabriel. My empress wishes the story of the Grail. And indeed, Dior La Chance's tale is in large part your own.
But for now, at least, the threads of her tapestry seem to have slipped your clever fingers, and it falls to another to weave for a while."
"What the hell are you talking about?" Gabriel scowled. "What other?"
"You are not the only prisoner in this chateau, Silver Saint."
"Of that I've no doubt. But the cup is broken, Chastain. The Grail is gone. And there's none alive who know her tale better than I."
"No," the vampire agreed. "None alive."
The last Silver Saint's eyes narrowed. The armrests of his chair creaked dangerously as he squeezed.
"You can't mean..."
"Can I not?"
"No," Gabriel snarled, incredulous. "Margot's not that fucking stupid."
Jean-Francois raised a hand as the Silver Saint rose from his chair.
"I would advise against any outbursts of temper, Gabriel. I am certain you would rather wait here in the company of good wine and willing flesh than walk with me back to hell. Because hell is exactly where I am headed."
The vampire met the Silver Saint's eyes, the air crackling between them.
"You may draw cold comfort from that at least."
"You can't believe a word she says," Gabriel spat. "That bitch is made of lies."
"Whereas I am certain every note you have sung to me thus far is God's own truth."
Jean-Francois smiled, almost affectionate.
"Every coin has two faces, mon ami. Every tale, two tellings. We shall return to yours presently, no fear. But until then..."
The door swung open silently, Melanie stepping back into the room. She carried a fresh bottle of Monet and a gold bell wrought with howling wolves. Her skin prickled as she placed both on the table, glancing at Gabriel through the long, sooty haze of her lashes.
"Do you wish me to remain, master?"
Jean-Francois raised a lazy eyebrow in Gabriel's direction. The Silver Saint was silently seething, his hands in white-knuckle fists. And for the first time since they'd met, the vampire fancied he caught a sliver of true fear in those storm-grey eyes.
"I think our guest would prefer solitude for now, love."
The historian glanced at the bell on the tray.
"Ring if you've an itch, de Leon. Someone will be along to scratch it."
"You've no idea the devil you waltz with, Chastain."
"Perhaps not," the vampire inclined his head. "But I do love to dance."
The historian strode from the room, velvet frock coat whispering about his heels. He could feel the Silver Saint's gaze burning a hole in the back of his head as Melanie shut the door behind him, locked it firmly. The six thrall swords outside the cell bowed low, their eyes downturned as the Marquis reached into his pocket, lifting a small black mouse on the palm of his hand. Gazing into the creature's dark eyes, he murmured,
"Keep an eye on our guest, Armand."
Placing his familiar on the flagstones, the vampire followed the stairs down to the chateau, Melanie walking swift behind. With every step, the smile he'd proffered for the Silver Saint's benefit faded. The grim amusement he'd felt at the Lion's fear grew more distant. The watchful familiars and deathless courtiers he passed were but shades, a darker shadow now swelling in his mind. He knew he was in no true danger, that his mother would risk no harm to her favourite child. But the thought of this abomination, the litany of its crimes, the notion he must somehow win its trust. Iron-bound doors were unlocked at his command, and he descended into the chateau's bowels, past the limit of all light and hope. If Sul Adair's upper reaches were a hymn to heaven and earth, the dungeons beneath were an ode to the abyss, silent and dark and utterly forgot. Thrall swords marched at his side, Meliné, his ever-dutiful second, boots ringing crisp on black stone as they wound down hidden paths, farther and farther from the light. And at the last, in the deepest, darkest pit within Sul Adair's belly, the Marquis Chastain and his company stopped outside a pair of heavy stone doors. They were banded in silver, sealed with a lock and chain of the same. Jean-François withdrew the key his dame had entrusted to him, handed it to his majordomo. Wincing with discomfort, Meliné loosed the silver padlock, Jean-François stepping back as the thrall swords unwound the chains. And at a nod, straining, the men dragged the heavy doors wide. A cell waited beyond, black as pitch and smelling faintly of blood and char. Its walls were cut from raw rock, rough-hewn and hasty, ringing with the song of rushing water. 50 feet wide, 50 feet deep, it ended at a jagged drop into a rushing tumble of dark water, still flowing despite the Everwinter gripping the world far above. An underground river. Three thrall swords stepped into the cell, cautious, placing an ornate leather armchair at the water's edge, a mahogany table beside it. A chemical globe, two crystal goblets, and a bottle of green glass were set atop it. Their work done, the men retreated with torches held high, never once turning their backs on the river, the dark shore beyond. Meliné wrung her hands, pleading, "Master, I..." Jean-François kissed his fingertips, pressed them to the woman's lips. "See to de Lion. I will call if I have need." Her eyes shone with fear as she bowed her head. Jean-François glanced to the man looming beside him, 6.5 feet of thralled muscle, flaming torch in hand. His dark hair was slicked back from a widow's peak, beard trimmed so sharp it might cut the lips. "If I should have occasion to shout, Capitaine Delphine, do come quickly." The Capitain placed his right hand on the Chastain livery at his breast. "Marquis?" Jean-François stepped into the cell, his leather-bound history pressed between his palms. The doors thumped closed behind him, all the world muted through the stone under the river's babbling rush. He listened to the chains being fixed in place, the padlock snapping shut, faint breath and crackling torches, and the thudding of Meliné's fearful pulse. He looked about the cell, featureless, cold, and save for the chemical globe at the river's edge, utterly lightless, as deep and dark a prison as his empress could fashion. And then he looked to the thing who called that prison home. She was tall, slender, pale as frost, lurking on the cusp of the light at the river's far shore, powerless to cross. Her head was bowed, long midnight blue hair draped about porcelain cheeks. She wore leathers and torn silks, and a beautiful ornate coat fit for the emperor himself. The fabric was crimson, trimmed with golden filigree, stained with old blood and new ashes, and the ruins of hateful ambition. The lower half of her face, her jaw, her dreadful murderous teeth were locked behind a muzzle, set with silvered bars. And she watched him, silent, rage burning like an angel's blade, stare black as a devil's soul. "I am Marquis Jean-François of the Blood Chastain, historian of Her Grace Margot Chastain, first and last of her name, undying empress of wolves and men." The monster said nothing. "You are Selene Castille, last of the Liathe." Still the monster named Selene made not a sound. Her eyes burned like candlelight in the dark. The air felt sticky black and lush. It seemed for a moment that the Marquis stood not at the edge of a river, but the abyss itself, and that only the cold press of those teeth to his throat might save him. But he turned aside, set his history upon the table, scratching at the wound beneath his cravat. And, smoothing his frock coat, Jean-François took a seat in the leather armchair, looking back across the water. "Will you say nothing, mademoiselle?" The Liathe remained mute, shaking like a newborn fowl, eyes fixed on his throat.
I can wait all night, the historian said, and as many nights thereafter as required.
How many have you languished down here already?
7? 8?
The pain must be unspeakable.
But it can all end, mademoiselle, if you will speak to me instead.
The monster stayed mute, racked and shivering.
Alas, then, the Marquis sighed. You do not mind if I sit and read a while. Your brother was quite forthcoming, and there is much to review.
Jean-Francois crossed his legs and opened the tome in his lap. Sucking soft upon his bottom lip, he let his eyes roam the pages, bold, dark script flowing, like the waters between them, drawing him back to the battle at Kernheim, the...
Gabriel.
Jean-Francois felt a small thrill in his belly. Turning another page with a steady hand. He murmured, glancing up.
I beg pardon, Mademoiselle Castilla?
The thing glowered on the light's edge, her stare black and hard as stone. Through the silvered cage locked across her mouth, Jean-Francois fancied he caught a flash of fangs.
My brother is speaking to you?
The historian patted the tome in his lap.
At some length?
The monster hissed then, a single word, dripping such venom it might have burned a hole in the stone at her feet.
Coward.
The Marquis smoothed a lock of curling blonde from his cheek.
Some would call it wisdom, to bend rather than break. For break we all must, cousin. You and I know better than most. The thirst always wins. But my pale empress wishes to hear your story, mademoiselle, rather than leave you here to rot in the dark. In her infinite generosity, Margot has offered you opportunity to speak of your past, of your exploits.
Of the Grail.
Oui?
The historian smiled, chocolate eyes shining. And of the Grail? The monster hung her head, her voice soft as velvet.
What has Gabriel told you?
As much as he can for now. I am dearly hoping you might bridge some of his gaps. We last spoke of the battle at Kernheim, he and I. The terrors, the wolf mother.
The vampire drummed his fingertips upon the page.
Your betrayal.
My betrayal?
So he named it.
And you believe him?
The monster shook her head, voice trembling with cold rage.
My brother is a drunkard, a braggart, but above all, a liar.
Well, Jean-Francois smiled thin, all men have their frailties. But I have every confidence you shall set his record straight.
No, sinner, she hissed, low and dangerous. I am disciple of Dread Wulfric, Laethe of the Asana, sworn to a covenant old when this empire was but as a babe, squalling in its fivefold crib. I am bearer of 100 shriven souls and 1,000 stolen years, granddaughter of a forever king and servant of the King of Heaven itself.
The monster shook her head.
No coward I, nor traitor neither.
A shame.
The Marquis trailed one sharp claw along his lip and gave a grudging nod.
Yet one cannot deny the courage you display with refusal, considering the torments you suffer. I commend your integrity, Mademoiselle Castilla. In fact,
the historian turned to the table, lifting the bottle atop it.
I shall drink to it.
And with a smile, he cracked the black wax seal with one long fingernail. The perfume struck him. Heady, thick, iron bright. Jean-Francois heard the monster across the water hiss through grinding teeth as he poured, filling one goblet, then the other. The blood was still warmed by the body heat of the thrall who'd carried it, flooding into the crystal, a dark meniscus so smooth it might have cast a reflection if only the Marquis had one to throw. And inhaling deep of that brilliant bouquet, the historian raised his glass to the thing across the river. Though Jean-Francois had neither seen nor heard her move, The abomination stood much closer now, feet poised at the very water's edge. Her eyes were locked on the blood, claws biting bone deep into her palms. Yet the veins beneath her skin were so parched, her hunger so profound, the wounds bled not a drop.
Santé, the historian smiled. Jean-François sipped the blood, shivering as that liquid fire kissed his tongue, rich as gold glass, deep as oceans.
He closed his eyes, let it slide down his throat, uncoiling from his belly and out to every finger's tip. When he opened his eyes again, the monster was still staring, shaking, poised on the very brink of that rushing flow and fighting with every mote of her wretched soul not to fling herself into the water in a vain attempt to cross, to drink. Oh God, to drown. He lifted the second goblet, filled to its brim. Rising slow to his feet, he held out the cup to the thing across the river.
Will you not speak, mademoiselle?
The last Laethi hissed, hate and misery and famine bubbling in her throat. Jean-François lifted the glass he offered, studying the play of light in the crimson.
As you like it?
And with a sigh, he tossed the goblet into the water. The glass struck the edge as it fell, splintering, droplets of blood gleaming like dark rubies on the stone. The monster dropped to her knees, lunging with a scream toward the water, hand outstretched and twisting, clawing. But the river might well have been a wall of flame, and as the goblet vanished into the flood, the Laethi hung her head, a shuddering, heart-sick moan slipping over her teeth.
Oh God!
My mistress has time, mademoiselle, the historian lied. Time in abundance. I shall return tomorrow, perhaps the night thereafter, and meanwhile, you may weigh your agony against your integrity. Scream as loud as the former demands and the latter permits. We have buried you too deep for even your Almighty to hear.
The historian picked up his tome, and leaving the open bottle to weave its perfume in the dark, he strode back toward the doors.
Wait.
He stopped, ruby lips curling.
Great Redeemer, wait.
Jean-François turned. The monster was yet on her knees by the water's edge, head hung low, fingernails clawing the stone. For all the stolen power in her veins, for all the horrors she had wrought, Selene Castilla seemed for a moment to only be that which she'd been, a maid from the Nordland provinces, a sister, a daughter, a girl.
Give us the bottle, she begged, and we will give you what you want.
Jean-François lifted his chin, glowering.
Be this some ruse? No ruse, God help us.
Something between a growl and a sob bubbled in her throat, and the historian realized the monster would be weeping, save that she'd not blood enough left inside her for tears.
Give us the bottle, sinner, and we will speak.
Jean-François walked slow back to the table, heel toe, and by the time he reached the water's edge, Selene was shuddering so badly it seemed she might simply fall apart. The historian had once gone 4 nights without sating his thirst, and he could only imagine the agony she now burned with. But still, to see her, this horror, this legend, so abased, filled him with something close to contempt.
This is the thing I feared?
He tossed the bottle across the water, 50 feet, glass glinting in the light. In her haste to snatch it, she almost dropped it, blood sluicing from its open throat and splashing upon her hands. Desperate, the monster pressed the bottle's lip against her silver muzzle and upended it, spilling the bounty into her waiting mouth. She drank without pause, starving, utterly wretched, reaching the bottom and moaning as the dregs dripped onto her tongue. And though her mouth was caged behind bars of purest silver, still she licked the blood from them, from her hands, tongue and fingers sizzling on the metal, wisps of black smoke rising into the air. Jean-François took his seat, glancing to his own goblet on the table beside him. From his coat, the historian produced a wooden case carved with two wolves, two moons. He drew a long quill from within, black as the stare of the thing that watched him, placing a small bottle upon the armrest of his chair. Dipping quill to ink, Jean-Francois looked up with dark and expectant eyes. Celine drew a deep breath, inhaling the scent of blood and silver. "Begin," the vampire said.